It's a football. It's a football.
If you don't know football, you shouldn't be with a microphone in your hand.
Hello and welcome to Soccer Sense, the sensible football podcast, where we are standing on the balcony of an apartment near a soccer stadium to lament the elimination of Italy again in the World Cup qualifiers. This is Tariq joining you along with our Calcio correspondent, that is Karan.
Hey guys.
And Karan, we are here to do our quadrennial, four-yearly traditional episode of moping over the lack of Italy at a men's World Cup. The irony being, of course, this podcast has existed for about 13 years now, and it has seen Italy being at the World Cup only once. And that once was, of course, 2014 when they were eliminated in the group stage. And not to mention, there was a famous slash infamous incident in a game involving Uruguay. And of course, in an all-timer group that had Italy, Costa Rica, England, and Uruguay, where despite winning their first game, Italy contrived somehow to eliminate themselves. Since they have been trying to get back into the World Cup, they were eliminated in 2018 by Sweden, 2022 by North Macedonia, and this year they have moved further into Central Europe, or actually a little more Eastern Europe, you could say, getting eliminated by Bosnia and Herzegovina, who, of course, make a return to the World Cup, ironically, after 2014. Meanwhile, just to give you a perspective on Italy missing from the Football World Cup, what it has coincided with in Italy doing in other sports. In 2026 alone, Italy have won a game at the Cricket World Cup. They have actually reached the semifinals of the World Baseball Classic, which you could, for all practical purposes, say is the baseball world. And they have also done very well, or at least Italian drivers have, in the Formula One. Kimi Antonelli, of course, becoming one of the youngest drivers ever to win a Formula One Grand Prix, and is currently, I think, leading the point standings for driver. Not to mention Yannick Sinner, who actually wanted to end a press conference of his early because he wanted to go watch the Italy qualifiers, has been tearing it up in tennis. So they're doing fantastically well in everything else except for men's football, which is why we have called Karan here to open this Pandora's box, Karan. And mm-hmm. to take a step back, because as we do on Soccer Sense, that we... Now, this is the eighth year of us recording at least one episode involving the decline of Italian football. But let's trace it back right to the beginning. Of course, there have been a lot of tweets surfacing about the famous, I think, the Roberto Baggio-led report, which was talking mm-hmm. about the lack of technical skills and things like that back in 2010, 2011. And if you think yep. about it, 15, 16 years later, a lot of those people who came up through those ranks would be part of this Italian team, which was there on the field yesterday, losing in penalties to Bosnia. More embarrassingly, Karan, this was a team that beat Northern Ireland 2-0 and celebrated the fact that they will be dealing with Bosnia and Herzegovina in the next round or the qualifier round, and still did not yep. make it. You know, reminds one of Arsenal and I think it was Olympique Marseille when they had drawn mm-hmm. them in the Champions League and had kind of prematurely celebrated and then did not make it through. Football and sport have a way to find ways to make you humble. But Karan, let's begin with the origins of this. So if you were to sort of look at the symptom, the root cause and not the symptom, because the symptom is mm-hmm. Italy not getting into this big tournament, specifically the World Cup, but what yep. is it stemming from?
Well, I would say, I mean, before we get started, I think I definitely now need a raise for talking about this rubbish almost every year now.
Well, that comes with the territory, Karan. You are the Calcio correspondent.
Exactly. But either ways, but that aside, I would say that the first thing that we need to realize is that this is not a sporting failure. This is a structural failure, decades in the making, right? Now, every country goes through a golden generation, and through that period of golden generation, some of them have success, some of them, you know, flatter to deceive, you know, that happens, right? with Italy, they of course had their own version of the Golden Generation, which lasted, I would say, from probably the early 80s till 2006, right? And they kind of got, I wouldn't say they got close, but because of this culture of safety first, with the kind of talent that they had, they could have won a lot more than they actually did, right? But at the end of the day, it didn't happen. It didn't happen in 1990, it didn't happen in 94, it didn't happen in 98, didn't happen in 2000, didn't happen in 2004. In 2006 was basically the final leg of that golden generation, right? But and they end up winning the World Cup, etc. And that was basically the last time they've ever played a knockout game in a World Cup. Materazzi is basically the last goal scorer in the knockout game of a World Cup for Italy. So I mean, just think about that for a second. That's absolutely mind-boggling, right?
Yeah, I mean,
20
I mean,
years since they played a...
Anybody told you in 2006 that the next time, let's say in 20 years' time, the only... semi-final at a World Cup an Italian team would play would be at the Baseball World Cup. I don't
oh,
think
God.
Anybody would have believed.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely unreal. But that aside, I think, like, going back to the point, this is definitely a structural failure, right? Italy as a footballing nation is decades behind countries like France and Germany and Spain and even England for that matter, right? Every country goes through, you know, cycles of, you know, success and failure and rebuilding phases, all of that, right? France famously have gone through it. We all remember the fiasco that they pulled off in 2010.
Germany even more famously, because they called it the famous DAS reboot.
The DAS reboot, yes. Well, I mean, but then again, nobody can pull off the fiasco that France pulled off in 2010. I mean, we all remember that. Argentina themselves, you know, went through a cycle. But it happens, right? Every country goes through that. They learn from it, they build from it. And the one thing that France and Germany did, and even Argentina for that matter, you know, they kind of identified where they were lacking. They invested in youth, they invested in improving the technical skills of players. And today, you know, the results are there to see. Germany won the World Cup in 2014. They've gotten, you know, to finals and semifinals multiple times. France themselves have gotten to consecutive World Cup finals. Argentina, the reigning champions. Spain are, well, all conquering in the last 20 years.
Reigning Euro champions and
Euro
favorites to win this World Cup.
Absolutely. So, but with Italy, they are not able to do the same kind of rebuild that all these other countries are doing simply because they are run by a bunch of clown-faced dinosaurs. And it's a fact. They're run by... It's almost comical the way the game is run over there, right? Firstly, and you know, in these sorts of situations, the first go-to trope for anyone when it comes to any sort of failure in Italian football is, oh, clubs don't own their own stadiums, or at least majority of the clubs don't own their own stadiums, so it's difficult for them to compete and, you know, be financially competitive with teams from Spain or England or Germany. Well, that is only part of the issue. But let me tell you one thing. Give the 20 Serie A clubs the 20 Premier League stadiums to own, or the 20 Bundesliga stadiums to own, and they will still find themselves in this mess. That's because the issue is a lot more deep-rooted than just clubs not owning their stadiums. It starts with the way the game is run, right? There is literally no vision, no long-term planning. With Germany, I mean, you took Germany as an example. You know, the DAS reboot, one of the things that they kind of instituted was that, you know, there has to be a central talent pool, which all clubs need to contribute to, all Bundesliga clubs need to contribute to, in addition to other, you know, regulations that clubs had to follow, right, in terms of youth development, right? And the other thing is that, and we saw the results of that. With Italy, what happens is there's literally no incentive for clubs to produce players, right? There's no incentive for clubs to have a center of excellence. And even if they do, right, it's almost useless because the players just don't get the opportunities to play. The big clubs, for sure, for all the talk of, you know, wanting to produce players, you know, how many of the big clubs, you know, take Juventus, AC Milan, Inter Milan, Roma, Napoli, how many players have come through the academy of these clubs and made it big, right? I would say talented and most well-known Italian players of this current generation has never played in Italy. Marco Verratti has never played in Italy. He left Italy when he was 18, went to PSG, and he has never ever played a Serie A match. So again, So that is one. And secondly, when mid-table clubs like Atalanta or Como or Sassuolo, right, when these clubs, because they are always going to be cash-strapped, they rely more on producing talent. And to be fair, Atalanta have been one of the clubs who have consistently produced good, promising talent. What happens is, you know, these players come, they get snapped up by bigger clubs, but do nothing. Right? They're just sent out on loan to Serie B or Serie C for the next 10 years, never given an opportunity to play with the first team. And at the end of the period, they just move on and they just kind of fall through the crack, right? And every team, including Juventus, AC Milan, Inter Milan, every single team is guilty of this, right? Because there is no incentive for them to give young players the opportunity to play in the first team. The fact is, I mean, I might be a Juventus fan, but this is an absolute truth, right? If you remember, before Erling Haaland, and it's not just Italian players, any young player, Erling Haaland, before he joined Dortmund, he was very, very close to signing for Juventus, right? In the last minute, Dortmund came in and swooped him up. Had he moved to Juventus, he would be a nobody today. I can guarantee that. Because he just would not have played. He would have just been sent out on loan to 23 different clubs and probably brought back to the first team when he was probably 47 years old or something.
So which brings us to this point, Karan, that looking forward, and of course, mm-hmm. as a collective, as a podcast, we have been fans of watching the Italian team on the world football mm-hmm. stage. There is definitely a certain allure to watching a team like that. Both succeed as well as fail. But as you rightly pointed out, that now the failure is less to do with what's happening on the field, which is why we have not spoken even a single word about the tactics and the game yesterday. And there is really no point in delving into it because it would be flogging a dead horse in that sense.
I mean, let me just say one thing, right? When you made the point earlier about Italian players celebrating when Wales were knocked out. When you reach a state where, you know, you are more worried about who you might end up with in the next round, that's when you know that you failed as a footballing nation, especially a nation. It's fine for, you know, teams like, lesser known teams to do that. But when a team like Italy does that, then, you know, you have some serious problems.
Yeah, exactly. Which is kind of what brings me to the next point that I kind of want to quickly talk about, which is that they seem to have also lost an identity of what their football was about. Mm-hmm. And it brings into this vicious cycle, which is that you are not developing youth now, hence there is not much success on the international stage, which can inspire future generations to look mm-hmm. for, you know, representing the Azzurri and earning glory for them, which then becomes a tougher and tougher problem to solve because there are players and youth players, like, for example, the Verratti example that you bring out, mm-hmm. who would just be going somewhere else or picking up some other sport, which makes it harder. So if the FIGC, for a second, were mm-hmm. to take off their clown masks and mm-hmm. and their dinosaur suits, mm-hmm. what would be your one suggestion in terms of, let's say, if Italy wanted to do their version of the Dastri?
I mean, clean slate, get rid of the old school mentality and start fresh and be a bit more optimistic, not just on the field, but even off it. Be willing to kind of give young players the opportunity to play, make it mandatory for clubs to have realistic goals when it comes to youth development. Because right now, while there is on paper, there are regulations which clubs are supposed to follow, it's just a rubber stamp. That's all there is, right? I mean, there was talk about, you know, clubs having B teams who play in the lower leagues. I mean, I think right now Juventus, AC Milan, and a couple of other clubs have their B teams. But what's the point, right? They just play in Serie C or Serie D. They're never going to get an opportunity to play in the first team, right? And the other thing is, don't taper over cracks, right? Because that happened, the biggest mistake. In fact, the worst thing that actually happened to Italy, ironically, is winning Euro 2020. Mm-hmm. It pains me to say that, but it is a fact, right? Because it tapered over so many of the cracks. And if we really dig deep into all those results, I mean, while on the outside, yes, 37 games unbeaten, including a Euro championship, fantastic, right? But if we really dig deep, barring that, probably that game, the quarterfinals against Belgium, where they genuinely played fantastically well, there's no other result that really stands out saying, oh, wow, this was something unexpected, right? I mean, let's face it, Spain really outplayed them in that semi-final.
Yeah,
Right?
Spain,
And
I
they won
think
on
for the
penalties.
first about 20, 25 minutes were all over them, in fact.
Absolutely, absolutely. But they held on fair enough, and you know, credit to them. And you know, it was a case of the Euro victory was a case of, you know, a lot of good things coming together at the right time with players in form and injuries and all of that. Fabulous. But unfortunately, it kind of tapered over a lot of the cracks.
Yeah, I think
right? So again,
also the sense that they took the wrong lessons from it, that, oh, we have won doing
absolutely.
this, so, you know, we don't need to change anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. And again, going back to the 37-game unbeaten run, right, barring that game against Belgium, they've beaten Netherlands a couple of times in the Nations League, who are right now not the most competitive, but fair enough, okay, we can give them that. But other than that, I mean, there's nothing that really stands out, if you ask me. Even in the Euros, in the, I think it was the round of 16, a team like Austria actually took them to extra time, right?
Yeah.
And it was an extra time goal from Chiesa that actually got them through. So, again, tapering over the cracks, that is something that FIGC are famous for.
Which is, and Karan, just before the podcast, we were kind of looking at, thinking about how did Italy do in Euro 2024? And it was so bad that we had no recollection what the to go back to Google to find out what the performance was like. I think that sums up the performances of the recent past. And of course, we are condemned then to not see the Italian men's team at the bare minimum at a World Cup, at least until 2030, when Morocco, Spain, and Portugal will be hosting it.
And Donnarumma is going to be 31 at that time. He made his debut when he was 16, and he still hasn't played a World Cup game.
And again, that like for somebody like a Donnarumma, you have to kind of feel for him in the sense that he's probably the only position that does not have a lot of blemish. In fact, yesterday's game could have been very different if Bosnia had gotten past him a few times. He had a few good saves. But again, like you rightly say, it's after all a team game. And we have seen that the moral arc of the football universe may be long, but it tends to bend towards well, putting you back in your place or humbling you, which is what football is about. And of course, we will look at the larger picture and the World Cup as well. It's not like we'll not cover the World Cup because Italy are not there. But having said that, we just hope this is the last ever Soccer Sense podcast we have to record decrying Italy's elimination from World Cup qualifiers. Now, whether that would be the case in the year 2030 or not depends on where this podcast is and where the people in this podcast are. And who could have looked into the future? Because if you had asked the 2018 us that will we record this episode again, not once, but twice, we would have definitely bet against those long odds. So on that note, that's all the time we have for this particular episode. In fact, Vishal is so heartbroken, he's not even joined the episode.
yeah, we'll go with that story.
But we hope to have him in the future episodes. Meanwhile, you can find us in all the places where good podcasts are to be found, or you can find the subscribe button hidden inside one of the flares that was coming out of those apartments where fans had gathered yesterday to watch the Italy-Bosnia game. This is Tariq signing off along with Karan.
See you guys.
See you guys. Thank